Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
This winter night, when this light has started to move back around after yesterday's solstice. What I have down for sitting in with for Angie is chapter 7 of Uchiyama's commentary, Having a Passion for Life. What a nice title. So that's Uchiyama's, he has several kind of themes and words that he really likes in this whole commentary. And this one is life itself, the passion for life. And he quotes from Sawaki Roshi, or at least, no, he says what he thinks Sawaki Roshi's getting at. Life is the most essential matter. Life itself is the most essential matter. And then in back in Dogen, in the instructions, there's this word Zengon. That's the power of the life force. That's life itself. And Dogen Zenji says, cultivate a spirit which strives to increase the source of goodness upon a mountain of goodness. What does that mean? That's a really nice, mysterious way to put it, very Dogen-like. What?
Caroline, could you read that again?
Yeah. So Dogen says back in the instructions, cultivate a spirit which strives to increase the source of goodness upon a mountain of goodness. So I take that to be that mountain of goodness is what's inside of us. That's what's in each of us, and that is the life force. I mean, you could you can read history and evolution in a lot of different ways, but you could certainly make a very reasonable and cogent case that human history, and maybe scientists don't talk like this, but maybe even evolution in a certain sense, rests on this mountain of goodness. Of all where we have been and where we're going, if we don't get too swept up in the newspapers, which and the news media, whatever form that takes, which Thoreau advised against also, of course. What does it matter to your spirit to read of who died in what railroad accident at the time when he was writing. So there's many good things that human beings have done and continue to do in this life based on the mountain of goodness that's within us. But the practice of Zazen is to get to know that mountain of goodness, and, as Dogen says, to cultivate the goodness on top of that, to really get to know it, and then to cultivate it. So then Uchiyama goes on the cultivation of the life source, and he has a lot of nice metaphors in here, one which I'm sure many of you, I know many of you like to garden, as do I and Angie, that he has this garden metaphor, saying, well, cultivating this life force. So, but we have to be careful. That's partly what the cultivation is about. It's not just that we can open up to this mountain of goodness all of a sudden. That could lead us astray. And he says, but the way we usually go about this, instead of kind of trusting the life force, is to do it bigger, better, faster. And so you want to plant your garden, and you plant it, and then you give the plants too much fertilizer, and you end up killing the very thing you're trying to cultivate. I don't know if it's happened to any of you, but it's happened to me in my gardening life that I have in an effort to try to help a plant, I thought, sometimes when we're trying to help, we don't see our intentions clearly. So Waki Roshi also mentions intention, which I wanted to talk about a little later. But so this cultivation is seeing what we're doing and seeing what can be helpful in our life. How we can really get in touch with this life force and this mountain of goodness. So, and he goes on to say in another metaphor about children and science, and how there's this modern way apparently in Japan at the time of diet for children, and the children have to get so many calories and they're supposed to eat so much, and you should follow this formula. And he says, you can't follow the formula. In fact, in the case of if you're raising children or giving anyone something to eat, if you give them too much to eat, you can ruin their digestive system. So there's this matter of non-forcing also. Part of the cultivation is not forcing things and not going by any formulas, prescriptions, as it were. So no prescriptions or formulas in any mechanistic way, anyway. But there are touchstones. There are things that religion, including Buddhism, one of our earlier chapters was the religious life, that Buddhism describes, and one of the early basic description that the Buddha gives is doing no evil, cultivating good, purifying the heart or mind, variously translated. This is the way of the Buddha Dharma. So that's so remembering that is, I could say it's kind of a prescription, but if we really take that in, and through the cultivation of Zazen we do, inevitably, that's what we see begins to happen. And we see we don't have to force, and we don't have to follow prescriptions. So about intention, Waki Roshi starts off with this pretty strong statement about his understanding of the Theravada schools of Buddhism and what motivation is and how that's different from the Mahayana Buddhism, because there's no room for carelessness in the Mahayana. But in my understanding of the Theravada sutras and texts, there's a lot of emphasis placed on awareness of your intention. And in fact, one of the Four Noble Truths in the Eightfold Path, the last of the truths in the is right intention. And that's the second one after wise view, wise intention or wise view. So it's not just that we're given a free pass if we have a good intention. We need to cultivate and see what a good intention is. We have to do that. In Zen, also in another writing of Dogen's, the 108 ways to awakening or enlightenment, that particular one, wise intention, is one of the 108 ways that we can do that. So, and particularly right intention means renouncing greed or selfish desires and cultivating goodwill, so in an active way, like when we say the Metta Sutta, and also cultivating non-harming, So really being aware of those things, cultivating them. So, Uchiyama says, we go from day to day handling machines and working with things that are in themselves lifeless, hardly ever taking a close look at what is alive. Well, how is it to look at what is alive? That's a question we can kind of ask ourselves. It's a cultivation of awareness that in itself brings up this right intention. I mean, just when we start to be aware of when we look around, even our relationship with our machines can change. Our relationship with our work email, our relationships with our Cuisinarts, our relationships with whatever it might be. When we start to really be present for every act that we're doing in our lives, or at least have that intention. It's not always possible to be that present, and of course we aren't always that present. But there's that aspiration to be that present. I had some more to read from Uchiyama, I think, here. So another thing I wanted to say was that just cultivating awareness brings not only passion, but compassion in and of itself. It brings up compassion. And it's we become aware of all that there is, or at least much more starts to appear to us. And the all of it, the good and the bad and the ugly and the beautiful. Uchiyama says further in here that that where is that section? He talks about the stability and evenness. Quotes Dogen is in the instruction saying, in evenness. So that's when we can see all of these things, the good and the bad, whatever is around, including the parts that we are not happy with, or even abhor in a way. We can still hold those with a kind of a compassion and generosity of spirit. So another thing that Uchiyama brings out in this chapter in his commentary is how important it is to trust ourselves in a way, how he, in his view, modern education is just ruining us, which people are still writing about that, maybe even more so now than they were in the 50s when he was talking about, you know, education in Japan being rote, and there were certain ways that you did things in certain ways, but many Asian cultures have had those practices for many centuries. I don't know really about Japan. But he says we need to trust ourselves in a way. Instead of coming up with the check the right answer type of education, we should place the emphasis on the development of one's own creative, intuitive, and thinking powers. So that kind of trust in ourselves, and that's a kind of a cultivation that a passion for life brings forward. Then another theme that Uchiyama has in here is a kind of a wholeness, the wholeness of your life. That's where the passion of your life is. It is fundamental that you put your energy into the wholeness of life before you get carried away by a single aspect or a single view of a situation. And then he tells a story about this bird that to hatch her egg would every so often get up and turn the egg over. And he says it wasn't, he really puts a nice spin on it. He says it wasn't because she knew, she was like programmed to do this, to turn the egg over so that the egg would hatch, and she knew that, but I'll read that part. She seems to do it because her abdomen gets very warm, and by turning the eggs over, she can cool herself by pressing on the relatively cool other side of the egg. Our passion for life works in the same way. When your passion embraces the whole of life, you naturally look around to see what is cool and what needs to be taken care of. This is the feeling of passion that arises naturally and is the activity or the function of our lives. So this wholeness, this cultivation of awareness, a wholeness, and this stability too, this, that section talks about the stability of, the instructions to the cook. Do not be absent-minded in your activities, nor so absorbed in one aspect that you fail to see other aspects. Students should be able to see that side from this side as well as this side from that side. Practicing with intense effort, using all your ingenuity, you will be able to grasp Zen that goes beyond the surface of character. And then another theme that Uchiyama has in here is genuine Zen or living Zen, and that's the passion for life Zen. The nature or quality of Zazen that Dogen Zenji teaches is a stability, an evenness toward life, wherein life simply becomes life. At the same time, in the Tenzo Kokyun, he teaches us about a functioning through which life actualizes life. So, the wholeness, the awareness from which naturally arises compassion and passion. And then that was sort of one of Dogen's themes all the way through here. That evenness, that stability of looking at everything, looking at every vegetable, looking at every grain of rice, looking at all the assignment of duties to the various people, just that evenness of flowing through. So that's pretty much all I had tonight for, except I have a little poem, but that'll be after we have a discussion. So if there is discussion, that would be wonderful. Jeffrey.
This is we're in the realm of comment. Good question.
Okay.
Sometimes the alignment of sometimes a Dharma talk, what's happening in your life, sometimes just feels so embracing and the way things dovetail. So for myself, the last several years, the word intention in its Buddhist sense has really, really come home to me. And reflecting on when I was a younger student and practitioner, how it wasn't a word that was part of my spiritual vocabulary. It wasn't one that I heard a lot. And I think those of us who practice for some period of time find certain expressions of the Dharma come home with an intensity that sometimes just kind of blows us away. Knowing we've read the words, we've heard the talk, and all of a sudden, you know, when you wake up in the morning with and consider intention initially, it's a very powerful and motivating force. And where you see passion and compassion flow out of that, you realize to what degree the ancestors are pushing you along gently and sometimes hitting you over the head with it, like, intention, buddy. waking up to intention. And I think about if you were to talk to a younger person regarding the practice, I just don't recall intention being placed in front of me quite the way I see it now as I'm an older person. So I know it's been a real gift to understand the importance of intention in practice. And if you haven't awakened to it, its importance, the practice is much harder. It becomes much easier once you see the value of intention in your practice. I guess that's the point I'm trying to make here. And so when you read that particular part that you just read, it was just confirming in terms of what my life feels like and what this particular Zen master had to say. You know, and that's where it seems like mind meets mind. And it's like, oh, okay, I really get that. That's so important. And I'm a couple of days away, a week away, I guess, from turning 70. And I think of how important it is to understand some of these things before I get much older. it's been made especially clear since I've had, with just the last year and a half, so many friends passing. And passing in a manner that was very, really, really struggled with their passing in terms of how they passed. I was learning so much from that. So, and at Thanksgiving time, I gave words of appreciation for the opportunity for us to practice together. And a month later, we're here at Christmas time, and I'm feeling extremely grateful again for these opportunities. We have a small sangha, but it's extremely powerful when we meet. And that's my experience of it. So thank you very much.
So I always wonder about there's intention, but then there's follow through. And so, how my dad had this expression: "The road to hell is paved with good intention." And you know, so I meant to do that, or I intended to do that. So it's hard to see. You wake up with that intention in the morning, but then you know, circumstances overtake you, or you forget about it, or some other intention gets in the way. So that's what I've always found difficult.
Especially around this time of year, because you think about goals and did I accomplish my goals for this year and planning goals for the next year, that sort of thing. So it's all wrapped up with intention.
It is all wrapped up with intention, and intention, I think, well, the wonderful thing I think about this chapter is he has a particular Zen way of bringing intention out, and that includes intention as a big word, and it means a lot of things that Jeffrey was talking about, and it also means what you're talking about. It's almost like you can't talk about, which is why Jeffrey kept talking about intention as in that deep level when you start to really wake up with it, you know, when you start to really feel you can trust yourself with the intention. But so that's what I think he's pointing to, and there's all these other adjunct factors that help us understand what that deeper intention. I mean, maybe the key image for me is from Dogen: cultivate the spirit of goodness upon the mountain of goodness. You know, that we have that, and that's what our deepest intention is to be, well, it's often put in the negative, but then Dhammapada, it's the positive, to cultivate the good and to not harm and to purify the heart or the mind. You know, so it's those are our deepest intentions. And so when we get, and then the other intentions, yes, we'll have to make choices. And there's what's confusing about that phrase too. I remember being, I don't know when I came across that phrase, you know, a kid anyway. The road to hell was paved with good intentions. Now, what does that mean? You know, what does that mean? So. But I think what he's pointing, what Uchiyama and Dogen are pointing to, is the equanimity also, that even to just stay with, you're not going to, you can have all kinds of intentions and levels of intentions, but some will get filled and some won't. I think what Jeffrey pointed to was quite powerful and striking also in the Tibetan tradition of actually, and also in Theravada, waking up and actually cultivating an intention. Like when you get on a, when you go on a sesshin or a longer retreat, you can have the time to do this outside of the busyness of life, to really wake up and say, what is my intention? I'm going to, whatever it could be, you know, you can put it in the abstract or the very down to earth. But it is not a prescription to hang on to, but it's a nice practice. Paul?
When I got started doing this, I was all over the board, whatever, looking for something. So I tried this, tried that, tried this, tried that. And then one day, I fell into this particular spot in meditation. And it just clicked. And it was in. And I go, oh, I'll stick with that. It's been many, many years. And I stuck with it. It's made enormous difference. There were times when I thought maybe I should try something else, but nothing else satisfied. So it's become a habit.
Yeah. Cultivating Zazen is always a way to go. See how much more of the mountain there is.
Oh. Yeah. Take the root though.
Have some time if anyone wants to say anything else. Judy.
I just wanted to mention, in this very busy time of year where we're just, there's so much hustle, bustle, there's so much activity going on, it is, I'm so grateful to have this Sangha, to be peaceful with you and with myself all together. And it's just, it's very lovely. And I'm so grateful for all of you.
Thank you. Yes, it's a great gift that we have. I know we all know that. But sometimes it's good to be reminded to have it put out there. Judy, Jeff, and Dave. Well, as I was reading a bit today, a poem came my way, and I just thought, oh, this is kind of like a Zen Christmas poem. Or at least that's just, maybe that was that frame of mind I was in. But but actually, it's a poem for any occasion. It doesn't have to be Christmas. And it's anonymous from 16th century Korea. So there was sort of a Zen reverberation there, and it reminded me of another Zen poem. It's called Tell Me What Was Love Like? Was it round or square, short or long? Or of a shape one would be proud to wear. I do not know. I only know that none who knows its shape can say where love begins or ends. I only know that none who knows its shape can say where love begins or ends.
Where did you
so
read
this
that?
Did actually happen? It's from I'm not sure where it's from. I need to look it up, but I was looking at some notes from a Zen teacher who or a Dharma teacher who's a friend of mine, Martine Batchelor, and she had this poem in some.
Because she was a Korean nun.
She was a Korean nun,
yeah.
and so there was that association.
Right.
And then the theme or the subject reminded me of that shape in the Ryokan poem when he talks about laying his robe down to take in all the children of the world. You know, so. Sit for a minute.